final speaker is Nazreen Mustafa Siddiq. Excuse me. She is Minister of Reconstruction and Development of the Kurdistan Regional Government, and I think is in a good position to sort of put another perspective on this scene from Iraqi Kurdistan perspective. So welcome and look forward to hearing.
Good afternoon. It is so good to be present when the women are a majority in this hall. although I'm used to be with men most of the time, but it's really good to be with women, so much women anyway. I would like to thank the U.S. Institute for Peace for hosting this important roundtable. Special thanks for Director Ms. Pamela. And also I would like to thank my friend Amina, who has been very persistent in really working hard in making this happen. Being the third speaker, actually, I wouldn't like to talk theoretically about Islam, and I would really be very practical and talk about my experience in living and growing up in a Muslim society and then leading in a Muslim society right now. So my topic will be really very specific to Iraq in general and Iraqi Kurdistan, the northern part of Iraq that is now outside the control of the central government. Okay, I will try. The topic we are dealing with today is very important, and it's important because really given my limited experience in outside my region. I was only outside my region for 15 months attending my MPA, attending at the Kennedy School of Government to get my MPA. That was my only experience outside my region. But during those 15 months, I have realized that the external point of view of women in the Middle East, where traditionalism, tribalism, conservatism, and fundamentalism supposedly prevail, is one of submissiveness and social repression, with limited access to education, where women are not allowed to drive cars or go out shopping alone or socialize freely. I mean, that's the idea I got when people who were introduced to me. While this external point of view is correct to some extent, of course the actual situation is much more complicated than that. It's not just that simple. Such oversimplified generalization are never accurate. Certainly not in Iraqi Kurdistan, where there are many examples of well-educated women who are active in society and in public institutions. Yes, women in Iraqi Kurdistan do not have the level of freedom to move about to move and express themselves as women here in the United States do, but majority of people in Iraq, men and women, don't. So with the freedom and the extensive opportunities of education that we have had, and in Iraq all education is free, with the struggling and suffering experienced by women in Iraqi's turbulent history, especially since the early 1980s, and with the international protection of Iraqi Kurdistan, and with our strong family system, women in Iraqi Kurdistan are tempered and seasoned, positioned to contribute significantly to improving the quality of life for all Iraqis. Many of the essential conditions required to allow this needed contribution to happen already exist, but more is needed. If I could give some Kurdish perspective on what is a Kurdish society is like, we are a family-centered society. Our families are very strong and protective of women. But they are very supportive too. My parents, for example, came from a small village in the mountains of Iraqi Kurdistan near the border with Turkey. I'm their only daughter among eight sons. My family, my parents, my brothers have always strongly supported me through my education, my work with the United Nations and the Kurdish government, and my coming alone to the United States to study. I mean, in Iraqi society, these happenings are rather radical, but then again, our history is also radical. Iraqi Kurdistan is an autonomous region where the flag of Iraq does not fly. The region was established by Iraqi law in 1970, but not really put into effect until the government of Iraq withdrew its administration in late 91, after the Gulf War. Iraq is a country of some 23 million residents. About 5 million are Kurds, and most of the rest are Arabs. More than 90% of the population are Muslim. The rest are Christian, Yazidi, and other followers of other kind of beliefs, very specific to Iraq. Though we are people of the mountains area where Turkey, Iraq, and Iran meet on the map, Kurds are ethnically very different from Arabs, Turks, and Persians of Iran. With more than 25 million Kurds in Turkey, Iran, and Iraq following the World War First, the First World War, though Kurds were promised, we were deprived of a country of our own. Our struggles since then, especially from the 1960s onward, have met with extreme brutality and oppression, including the total destruction of nearly 4,000 communities in Iraq alone, generating massive displacement and forced relocation of families. Many fled to neighboring countries, becoming refugees in Iran and Turkey. And all across Iraqi Kurdistan, chemical weapons were used. Halabja, where more than 5,000 were killed by chemical weapons, is only the most notable of many examples. Since late 80s, more than 200,000 Kurds have disappeared, leaving many households headed by widows. This is the historical background that the whole nation was subjected to, but definitely women had to even had an added burden. In addition to all of that, they have to get the emotional effect of the displacement, of losing a husband or being relocated from time to time. Though we live in an autonomous region outside the administration of Baghdad now, we live in a state of constant uncertainty and fear of what would happen when the international community withdraw its attention and watchfulness on our region. With the brutality and extreme oppression we have known so well, with the use of chemical weapons against numerous civilian settlements, and in 91, almost a decade ago, I myself fled in fear with more than 1 million fellow Kurds as refugees into the mountains of Turkey. The source of this fear remain ever threatening, and that feeling is creating some other dynamics in the society. Although Iraqi society has been always, you know, well educated, women were always played an important role in the society, but the political situation during the last 30 or 20 years really has created different dynamics, and especially in Iraqi Kurdistan, where, you know, the uncertainty and the threat of the brutality is there. That has created some uncertainty among the population. Iraq is not only rich in oil, but also, despite the great desert area, rich in water. With the right public policies, Iraq could very well feed itself and also have a very high level of public service. But it is Iraq human resources that need to be better known and understood. The countrywide education system before sanctions were imposed nearly one decade ago was reputed to be the best in the Middle East. The standards were high and it was all free. So were other essential public services. As perhaps here in the United States, in Iraq, girls are notably better students than boys. National high school exam determined who went to the universities and what they studied. Those with the highest mark had what amounted to the right to study what they wanted. Many high school students with the highest marks, women as well as men, choose medicine and engineering. Unlike here in the United States, in Iraq, it's easy and quite ordinary to find women with degrees in science and technology. As early as the 1950s, the government of Iraq sent students to the United States and Europe to higher studies. Women engineers and computer scientists in Iraq are not uncommon. Kurdish within Kurdish women within the family have much more influence than they are normally given credit for in public. Kurdish women led tribes as early as in 1920s. They were leaders of tribes. And there are still some tribes in Iraqi Kurdistan that are led by women. Women took part in the armed struggle against the Iraqi army in all the years. Kurdish women took care of their families when men were out in the mountains fighting against the Iraqi army. Especially since 91 and the withdrawal of Iraqi administration and establishment of Kurdistan regional government, the role of women got expanded into the public sector. The structure already exists for greater public service by women to happen. It's already happening, but it is so far very limited. Of the 35 members in the Kurdistan Regional Party Central Committee that leads the region that I came from, only one is a woman, which is 3% only. Of the 60 members in the Kurdish Regional Parliament, 4 are women, which is almost 7%. Of 25 cabinet members in the Kurdistan Regional Government, 2 are women, which make us 8%. And both of us are engineers and are in charge of engineering ministries. We also have women deputy ministers, director generals, and university professors. The NGO sector also has been developing, and we have some few NGOs that are oriented to care for women issues and empowerment. I am in charge of an engineering ministry, and I have a workforce of 1,600 persons. Approximately 50% of them are women, and they work as site and office engineers, technical staff, administrators, financial administrator, analysts, and auditors. During the past 10 years, more than 10 years ago, our families have lived almost in unimaginable freedom to go wherever they choose within Iraqi Kurdistan, though, and talk with whoever they wish about any subject they desire. They do not starve. They live in a physically healthy environment with plenty of clean air and water and nutritious, organically grown food. Education services from preschool through postgraduate studies are available, but they need to be modernized and greatly expanded. I mean, I could go on and talk about it just to paint a picture of the society today that is existing in Iraqi Kurdistan. I mean, we have access to satellite TV that is free and cheap. Telecommunication has been also expanded with the installation of digital equipment and cellular phone system. I'm talking like this because in the rest of the country, the communication lines are limited and restricted. We have unrestricted satellite internet access, and more recently an internet service provider is established in the region where people can access internet unlimitedly and freely from their homes. And this is unusual in the Middle East, that's why I'm highlighting it. My Ministry of Reconstruction and Development focuses on addressing the needs of internally displaced people, and we call them IDPs. According to a UN report, there is still 23% of our 3.7 million population are displaced. Much of my attention is directed toward serving those IDPs and providing their needs for housing and public service of education and health services. Resettlement has been very successful. In the last 10 years, out of the 4,000 destroyed villages, we managed to reconstruct 3,000 villages. More than 75,000 families have been resettled and provided with house and sustainable livelihood. Now, this is very important because when you have an IDP situation, when you live in a poverty situation or without a house, that really affects your ability to contribute and to have power over yourself and over, you know, making the contribution to the society. So our role as providing, rebuilding the country, and then providing the housing and education services in every part, even the most remote area, has been really a priority that would contribute to empowerment of the human being, and of course women and children in relation to that. One interesting findings to say, a UN study indicated that the child mortality rate in our region in the 90s, and as early as 90, was higher than in the center and south. This shows the neglect our region was subjected to even before the events of 91 and the separation of the two regions. In 99, and actually there was a following studies that was conducted in 2001, showed that child mortality rate in the center and south was higher than in Iraqi Kurdistan. Mm. And this has occurred even though the center and south has access to the exact same food and medicine, medical supply that we receive under the Oil for Food program. And under the Oil for Food program, it's the Iraqi government who make orders for food and medicine, so they can bring in as much as medicine they want. But yet, the child mortality and the health situation has improved in the Kurdish region much better than the center and south. Another perspective I like to share with you is how the humanitarian intervention that took place in 91 affected the role in general, the economic and political development, but also how it affected women's role in the society. The humanitarian intervention by the international community that began following the Kurdish refugee crisis as early as 91 has helped to accelerate the contribution of women in public service. Kurdish families allowed their daughters, sisters, and wives to work for UN agencies and international NGOs. They had the education, the drive, and the gumption. And they have excelled. Our women serves in all level of international NGOs or UN agencies. And this has helped them to qualify and better serve in our local institution. By becoming this point was mentioned by my two colleagues too. The women in Iraqi Kurdistan has become the source of income because working with the UN, you get the highest pay in the region. UN agencies, by applying their worldwide policy of gender balance, or even in some agency like WFP, they even recruit women more than men. This has really encouraged families to allow their daughters to go out and mix with, you know, that different, you know, modern, progressive culture of working with the UN in an international, multinational environment. And this has really contributed a lot. They became the source of income. So that political development has contributed to economic development and has contributed to the family itself. Well, I guess I have a few minutes. I will try to choose how to end up here. I think I'd like to end up by saying that the positive intervention by the international community made in 91 brought about a positive result that continues to live and grow in my region for more than 10 years ago. Of course, we wish that this experience be extended throughout the whole country and to be enjoyed by everyone, because unless the whole region is contented and sustained and protected, there is no sustainability for our region alone. Now, any positive change in Iraq in general and Iraqi Kurdistan would require positive intervention by the international community. And especially, I would say, the United States, as being the member of the Security Council and a strong member that has played a big role in Iraq and especially the development of the Kurdish and the protection of the Kurdish experience. And now the Kurdish leader or experience could be used to and analyzed to look for it as a model for the rest of the country. But that cannot happen by itself. I mean, Iraqi people alone cannot do anything. They need international support, especially with the current regime. And I would end by saying that Iraq as a country has a lot to contribute, and I'm convinced that the achievement of true democracy that is grounded on political and social freedom for both men and women in Iraq will be the opening for the change that is so urgently needed. But I believe change is in the air, and we are ready. Thank you very much again.